Blog Talk Radio.
Take a Run Productions. Welcome to Unknown Paranormal Radio, or URN Radio Show. I am Jeff.
I am Matt.
And we don't know where Outlaw is. Can you hear me?
What's going on, man? How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Leaving the grocery store.
Yeah, I'm leaving Chicago right now. I'm trying to navigate my way through a parking garage.
And operating the board at the same time.
Yes.
That's talent.
That is talent. Considering also, I guess I had to pay before I left. So,
nice.
I gotta figure that out. So what's going on, Jeff? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. Enjoying the summertime.
How was grocery shopping?
It was what it was. Had to get me mainly liquid and a belt. My belt that I was wearing earlier started to fall off today. It started to break. Like, I can't have this.
I'm trying to get out of the parking garage right now. It says 1 hour or less is $18.
Wow. They take a lot of their parking garage, don't they?
Got to love Chicago.
Right? The only time I've ever been to Chicago was actually flying there on the way to and from New York City. But from what I saw, it looked nice.
Yeah, and the machine just ate my debit card and won't give it back. So.
Oh, that sucks.
That's not good. That is not good.
Outlaw's on hold.
In a person email.
Hey, I'm gonna go mute.
Well, anyway. So we got Outlaw on the air yet? I guess not.
What was that?
I said, do we have Outlaw on the air yet? Because he's on hold.
Let me bring Outlaw in. Hold on 1 second. There he is. Kevin, what's up, man?
I've been on hold since the music.
Well, you are live now. Currently, Jeff is all the way back from shopping. I am currently sitting in a parking garage in Chicago because a little machine that ate my debit card.
Tax thought.
Oh, man. Well, and I'm currently having major internet issues. So I'm still trying to get the links up for the show for our guest and finish the blog talk page.
Well,
I've been working, been trying to get this done for 2 hours and haven't accomplished much.
I got the board running from my phone.
Well, we're live anyway. That's all that matters. General announcement this Tuesday, which I got to post in the on our Facebook pages and in the host Facebook page for all the show hosts of the network. But this Tuesday is the 2-year anniversary of Terrifier Radio.
Woo-hoo!
And so it is once again a free-for-all, meaning all the hosts, co-hosts of all the shows are more than welcome to call in, whether they stay the whole show or they call in for a few minutes. Hopefully everybody doesn't say, well, I'll just call in for a few minutes, and I have all my hosts leave after about 5 minutes of the show. But it's all right.
Well, it's a few minutes.
Oh, man, Jeff, you're on summer break, so you have no school.
No, but I have to think about what I'm going to be doing next year.
No, sir. I was a school teacher for 9 years. When school ends, the last thing on your mind at this juncture is anything dealing with school, because now you're trying to decompress from a school year. So don't give me that.
What I'm doing now is getting used to the idea of not getting up and going to work in the morning. Believe it or not, that's an adjustment. And then once I get used to that, then I start thinking about what I'm going to do next year. And then like 2 weeks before school starts, I go into panic mode going, oh, shit, we got 2 weeks before school starts. So it's a whole thing, you know. Actually, I'm looking at plays today next year.
Well, yeah, that's fine. But you can still support your brother out and call in to the damn show, damn it.
I'll call in.
Well, speaking of which, him being on break.
Do one of those obscene phone calls.
Oh.
How's it going?
I can do that. I'll be that guy.
You can do that. Oh, okay. Well, it don't really matter. The last anniversary show we did was the 3-year anniversary show for this show. And, of course, Matt and Dennis were tied up with something. And, so I already knew that they couldn't be on. Matt let me know. But we only had a couple radio show hosts call in, and they weren't even online long. Thank God Jody called in, and Jody talked for about an hour.
Right.
So hopefully everybody tune in this Tuesday, be a free-for-all. The only other show on the network that will have an anniversary, I believe, this year. I'll have to check, but I think Matt and Dennis's Full Spectrum Radio is the only other one that will have they'll have their 2-year anniversary, I believe, in September, if I'm not mistaken.
Cool. That worked.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shit, has it been that long?
Yes, it has, Matt.
Oh, by the way, Jeff, you'll understand what I'm talking about. I got my car back, and I didn't have to pay for parking.
Nice. And everybody's charging like $18 to park his car for an hour.
Yeah, it was an 18-hour minimum, whether you park for an hour or whatever. Yeah.
Well, here's something I got a question for you, Matt, since you're in the Chicago area. Do you ever go to any ball games for, like, the Cubs or the White Sox?
I have in the past.
What's parking around those stadiums?
About $25.
Do you know how much it costs to park right outside of the Rangers ballpark now?
How much?
It's $40.
Oh, yeah. The part of, well, shit. No, you were saying, have I, or do I go to the stadiums? No, I don't park at the stadiums. Just to park if I want to go, or going to a Bears game or something like that, it's $125 to park for a Bears game.
$125?
Just to park.
Do they leave you a slab of brisket on the front seat when you come back?
No. No, it's basically a middle finger and said, thank you for wasting your money.
Wow, I thought Jerry Jones' parking fees were greedy.
Yeah, and that's what parking starts at for a Bears game is $125.
Well, you see, for Cowboy games, it's more than 40. I know that. I don't know how much it is because you couldn't pay me to go watch a Cowboys game now. But just the Rangers, the Texas Rangers, the baseball team, charges around $40 or $50 to park outside of their stadium.
Yeah, they're not even really good. Well, same thing with the Cubs.
I went to a game last year when they were playing the Yankees, because I'm a big Yankee fan, and I paid like the $25 park and ride. I'm like, I'm not paying $40 to park at the stadium and then still have to walk my ass off.
Hey, Jeff, you wouldn't have paid to walk your ass off anyway because you don't like walking.
Well, I know, especially when I got to pay $40 for it. Now, if they'd have had, like, a case of, like, Bud Light or something waiting on me, cooling down, you know, in the trunk of my car when I got back, all right, then I can see the value in it. But $40 just to leave my car there for a couple hours? And then they pull that. This is what gets me. They pull that. We're not responsible for any lost or stolen property. For that much money, you bet your ass you're responsible. What the hell am I paying you for?
Well, they're paying you for you're paying them for the convenience of taking up a 10 by 20 spot.
Yeah, I can do that someplace else for far cheaper. But at least when I go to a Yankee game, I don't have to worry about parking there because I just take the subway.
I know that our guests will be calling in here shortly, and so I want to go ahead and get that out of the way. If I can ever get on the studio board, I'll play our sponsor ad, get that out of the way as well. Tonight's guest is Theresa Argy, a.k.a. the Haunted Expert. She has been involved in the paranormal since she could say boo. I like that. After years of residential and public investigation, Theresa joined up with Paul Harris, Weather, and Minnie Hanswag were born. A deep love of history and a passion for the paranormal bonded the women, and they became leaders and philanthropy. Blah, 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 blah. Side of the field. They are heavily involved in fundraisers for historical relevant haunted locations across the country. Historic preservation is their number one goal. The hauntings that come with it are just a bonus.
The Haunted House has been featured on numerous national television programs, including The Marriage Rep, Paranormal State, Haunted Collector, American Now, Paranormal Challenge, and My Ghost Story. Theresa has just completed her first book with journalist Eric Olson for Penguin Plus, entitled America's Most Haunted. The two also have a weekly radio program and website with the same name. Theresa is a teacher, lecturer, and tour guide working for Polaris Career and the Willoughby Ghost Walk, owned and by Kathy Weber. Although her family means the world to her, she is not your average soccer mom. She balances her life in the paranormal with her duties as well as a wife and a mother of three. You can find Theresa on America's Most Haunted site, www.facebook.com/AM Haunted. That's the Facebook page. And you also got www.americas-most-haunted.com. And you can also look up The Haunted Housewives, The Haunted Housewives on Facebook, and www.thehauntedhousewives.com. So, what we got going on tonight. So, I got that. I don't know if Theresa's called in, because I still have no internet.
Hey, Outlaw, I got something to tell you. You there?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, this is like your first show back since your operation, right?
Right.
So, how bad did that anal probe feel?
That was not an anal probe. You were messing with me the night that I tried calling in after my surgery and was drugged up in morphine.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt about the anal probing and all of the homoerotic stuff that's going on right now, but we do have a caller, which I believe is our guest, so give me just 1 minute and I'll bring her in. By the way, this is not easy to do and drive because I keep pulling over because I don't want to drive and actually have the be operating my phone. So. Hello.
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 Hey, it's Matt, Kevin, and Jeff. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Just trying to navigate the streets of Chicago at the moment.
Yeah, don't crash and die. Chicago's not, traffic's not good there. You'd be driving and talking and running to come here.
Now, you think it's bad that Matt's trying to drive through Chicago and do this show? I'm actually doing something worse. I'm trying to navigate my way through Northeast Texas, and I'm hearing a lot of banjo music here.
Don't stop.
Ding, 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 ding.
Keep going. Keep going. Don't stop.
I see a lot of people with beards, camouflage, and guns.
That's right.
Awesome. I see a lot of people that are pompous. I see a lot of pompous people with Starbucks walking around at the moment.
I just saw a guy with a sign that tells me that I have a pretty mouth.
Run!
Theresa, you don't know what you got yourself into, but we're a lot of fun. We like to make our guests just sit back and relax.
and to a certain degree feel a little uncomfortable.
And never talk to us again after this.
So you got one in Chicago, one in Texas, huh?
Oh, there's two in Texas.
Two in Texas, wow.
Yeah, I actually live in Central Texas, but I'm up in Northeast Texas, for a month or so on vacation. And just lost folks.
Now, Farisa, where are you? What state are you in?
I'm in Ohio. I'm in the Cleveland area.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you and I talked. I'm actually, of course, yeah, I don't sound like it, but yeah, I was born in Ohio. All my family's from Ohio, and I got transplanted in Texas when I was 7.
Ohio is kind of a mini United States. You got the North, you got the Central Ohio, and then you got Southern Ohio, and it's completely different dialects and ways of living in the different parts of Ohio. I'm up north. I'm right up by the lake. So
Ohio has one of the places I really want to investigate, but it's not Ohio University. I want to investigate Cedar Point.
Cedar Point?
Yes.
I haven't heard that it's haunted.
I want to well, I don't know that it is or isn't. I just want to investigate at the roller coaster capital of the world.
Oh, it's got some amazing roller coasters, yeah. Good times.
I would think that was funny because if I were a ghost, that's where I would hang out, is at an amusement park. And you'd be able to get an EVP of a ghost trying to give you their name, and they go, "Oh, my name is John!"
You know, what's funny is there is another amusement park in Ohio that is now closed down and it's abandoned, and it looks spooky as hell. I don't know if it's haunted, but it's one of those eerie places that looks like it could be haunted, like the site of a horror movie. Really, really cool place. And I guess the security's pretty lax and people have been going in there doing some urban exploring, but I haven't heard about any ghosts there yet. So
all we got to do is go up to that place with a generator, and we can ride some closed down roller coasters.
I don't know how safe they'd be. You're taking
yeah,
those.
Exactly. I know that I know that Kings Island's got some activity.
Kings Island, yeah, that's down closer to the Cincinnati area, which I went to school down in Cincinnati. It's actually kind of between Dayton and Cincinnati. And, yeah, there's some reports of some hauntings there. I think one of the TV shows actually did some sort of thing there. And Kings Island is pretty neat. You know, when you think about it, the way I look at it is there's probably spirits everywhere. It's just some of these places a little more of a reputation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, Farisa, when did you start getting involved in the paranormal? When I read your bio, apparently you have experiences when you were younger as a child.
Oh, yeah, I had experiences when I was real little, and it was an interest I had since a child. And I'm a little bit older, so back when I was a kid, it wasn't something that you really talked about. It wasn't socially acceptable to talk about ghosts or wanting to see ghosts, which just made it more fascinating for me. So I kind of was one of those weird kids that hung out in basements with Ouija boards and doing seances and hanging out in cemeteries and stuff like that. And I think I had my first paranormal experience when I was about, I'd say 8, it might have been in second grade. And then I had a couple more when I was little, but still it's not something you really talked about until actually probably really recently, maybe the last 15, 20 years that people really started talking about it without being put into an insane asylum or put on medication for believing in ghosts. You know, wasn't something that people talked about. Not a good thing, especially if you're in any sort of a religious household like I was. It was really a bad thing, and my parents sent me to confession every time I started talking about ghosts or bringing books home from the library on anything supernatural or paranormal. They thought it was the occult and a sin, and I was going to hell. And so I kind of laid low until about the late 90s.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. So when did you decide to start, investigating the paranormal?
The investigation part, unofficially, I was doing things with my friends when I was a teenager, mostly, going into abandoned houses and things like that. We didn't really know what we were doing. We didn't really know what we were looking for because we were young and there really wasn't a whole lot to go by. I read a bunch of books, and most of those were done by psychics, which I am not. So we didn't really know what we were doing, but we were looking around. There's a famous place here in Ohio called the Franklin Castle, which is basically just a big old house that's abandoned. And they've tried for years to put businesses in there or make it into a home or apartments, and it's almost like the property's cursed. Nothing is ever successful there. But that was one of the first places I remember hearing about that was haunted and going in to investigate. And I just scared the crap out of myself and went running out of there, but I'd been there a couple times. The actual organized, I'd say, investigation probably didn't come about until the Internet. So I would say the late 90s when I started finding other people across the country that were interested in the paranormal and the supernatural, and it was okay to kind of share your ideas. And I think I joined my first paranormal team or group in 2004. So about 10 years, the actual investigation part, officially, the group, the so-called ghost hunting groups, because that wasn't a term they had back then.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And now there's, thousands of groups.
I remember
all across the
country. When I first started looking for a paranormal team in 2004, I just met a couple of people. In 2007, I think there were 7 in Ohio that I could find on the Internet. By 2010, I think there were like 3,000. I mean, it just really, it really exploded. And that has a lot to do with reality television and ghost hunters and ghost adventures, I think. They really brought that to the forefront. So say what you want about those shows, love them, hate them, whatever. It's because of those shows that you have a show that I'm talking to you tonight, that we have this at all, because they've made it socially acceptable. And like I said, people can now talk about it without being labeled crazy. So, there's good that's come out of it. Even the bad shows, good has come out of them.
Oh yeah, definitely. And, I don't know if you ever met a close friend of mine and Matt and Jess, Jody Parks. She was actually on Paranormal Challenge as well.
Met Jody. I did a radio program. I think we were on the same radio program once. We're the alumni from the Paranormal Challenge show. Yeah.
Yeah. And now I lost train of thought. But yeah, I actually like Paranormal Challenge. That was a good show. Unfortunately, it didn't last long on air, but I watched all the episodes of it.
I liked Paranormal Challenge not just because I was on it, obviously. I appreciate the opportunity that I had. I appreciate the fact that we were chosen. We were kind of handpicked out of all these different teams that got to appear on the show. But it was cool. We really did investigate those places, and we really were on our own, except for we had the camera guy and the sound guy, and they gave us the equipment. None of that was staged. I mean, I can tell you that. I don't know what Jody's experience was, but everybody I know that was on that show, and I still stayed in touch with many of them because we've gotten together at different events and such, and what happened on that show was what happened on that show. None of that was staged. None of that was faked. So in that sense, it was pretty cool. I mean, you saw some of the teams in some of that show. They're like, well, we didn't get any video evidence, or this is the only audio we had, because that's what happened. So I really appreciate the fact that show really was true to what it was. I wasn't sure it was going to work. I didn't know, how can they guarantee they're going to get any evidence? But they seemed to make a show out of it, so.
Yeah, well, one of the things that they did was, they pick locations that hundreds of teams have been to. So, but I've been to some of them places, and it's kind of like it's a shot in the dark you know, pun on words, but you even can go to one of these haunted locations, you know, that you, a lot of them that charge and you pay money to rent out for the night, but you may or may not get any evidence. It really just depends, I guess, on the personalities of the team that's involved, whether or not the spirits want to communicate with them.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't guarantee anything at any time. And unfortunately, people see these shows and they have a show and it's a 60-minute show and they've got all this evidence. Well, sometimes they don't understand. They might have been at this location for a week to get those two tiny little audio clips. I was really surprised that when we did Paranormal Challenge, we were actually sent to Waverly Hills. So we got very, very lucky. We caught more evidence. They couldn't even show all the stuff that happened to us. There were just tons of things that happened, tons of EVPs. We were very, very lucky. But I know, I've been there. I paid big money to go to some of these big super haunts and spent the night there and nothing happened, you know, and that's just the way it goes. And sometimes you go into a location and it's active and sometimes it's just going to be quiet. It's never a guarantee. It's always kind of a shot in the dark.
Yeah. Now, have you had any experiences helping out with residential cases in your time doing paranormal?
Oh, yeah. I did almost strictly residential cases probably for a good 4 or 5 years. That's all I did was residential cases. I've done hundreds and hundreds of residential cases, and I've kind of changed my focus now on doing more of the historical sites, but we still do residential cases occasionally. Usually it has to be a pretty compelling case or somebody that we know, because I found that most residential cases, at least the ones that we are contacted for, the haunted housewives, we get an influx of people requesting investigations after we've done some sort of TV appearance, and 9 times out of 10, they just want to have entertainment. They want to see a ghost hunter in action, or they're just looking for attention, or they're planning a party or something. We've had some very, very strange experiences doing residential cases, so we've kind of backed off on them, but we do still do some occasionally.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that. I think every paranormal team's well, I'm not going to say every paranormal team. I'll backtrack that, because there are some teams out there that they have alternative intentions as far as doing the paranormal. But I will say the serious paranormal investigators out there that are in it for the right reasons and really want to try to help people, when clients call them, we've even had that down here in the country of East Texas, with clients that want to get, you know, famous, get on TV, just, you know, and will embellish their stories, you know. And sometimes I understand some of the clients I've come in contact with, they embellish the stories because of the fact that they're so upset. There's so much going on in their home, you know, and
right.
You get all hyped up. You get all hyped up, your mind just starts, you know, running 100 miles an hour. And that's where our job comes in, to ask the right questions and, you know, try to get through some of that and get them focused on what's really going on. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I understand people, they think they have to exaggerate what's going on to get you to come there. But, you know, I've been in some situations that were basically, they were dangerous to come into some residential cases. And it's, you know, I don't know, if you're from Texas, you might appreciate this. I carry a gun with me. I've had some very strange experiences doing residential investigations, and I've really had to rethink doing it. I've been in the situations where a person was hoarding, and it was just dangerous to be in the environment with the filth and the dirt and the structural damage of the house. I've been in situations where I found children that were being neglected and abused, and this person was more concerned about having a ghost hunter in their house. I've been in situations where one guy just saw my picture on Facebook, and he had really no intention of having a ghost hunt. He just kind of wanted to get me in his house, didn't realize I was coming with three other people. So, it's, you know, there's been some scary, scary situations. One team I was involved with was a TAPS family member. They were associated with the Atlantic Paranormal Society. And all that meant is that their affiliation was with them through different networks. And it's a whole process to go through to get the location. But the people contacted TAPS thinking that the Ghost Hunters TV show was going to come to their house. Then we show up because the case had been given to us by TAPS, and they're very upset that Jason and Grant coming in the house. You know, we've been in situations where we got there and there's a bonfire and they're having a party and they've invited their neighbors over. I mean, it's just really bizarre things. You really have to be careful. But then you get the people that are like, they're so terrified, so scared. They don't understand what's going on. Their kids aren't sleeping. They don't know where to turn. People think they're crazy. And those are the ones that you hope that you get, people that you can actually help either explain what's going on, help them work it out, or debunk what's happening and let them know there's nothing to be afraid of.
Right. Yeah, it's residential's in itself is a whole different ball game, and I try to stress to teams that listen to our show or new people that I meet in the field, and I try to tell them, look, do your research, talk to people that have been doing this for a while, you know, do some investigating of some historical places, and get your feet wet. Don't start a team and 2 weeks later start taking on a residential case. Because those are a completely different type of case because you don't know what you're coming into. I mean, not only do you have to worry about what kind of spiritual activity might be going on, but you got to worry about these people you don't even know, you know. You don't know what their intentions are, and you don't know what they got in their house either, you know. You're the first person to walk in their home, you know, so.
And you don't know You don't know if they have a big ditch out in the backyard to hide your body.
Yeah, and they might not be expecting you. You know, I've heard about teams that bring in, they do a residential case, and they bring in literally like a dozen people. Like it's a club, and this is an outing for a club. And people are like, what are these strangers doing in my house? And a lot of them don't know what they're doing. They're not experienced. They don't know how to handle people. Or their only interest is to find, quote-unquote, evidence. And, I mean, because we've done residentials, and I tell you, sometimes there's nothing paranormal going on. And sometimes the client doesn't want to hear that. The people don't want to hear that. But if that's what's happening, that's what's happening. Or sometimes there might be stuff going on, but you can't figure it out. You don't have all the answers. We can't guarantee what we do. So residentials, I think, require a very special touch. And you really have to tread lightly and be very careful. We do now. We've started after a few experiences. We make sure we do thorough interviews and we check things out the best that we can before we do it. But historical places, especially these ones that are open to the public, I mean, that's a win-win. Even if you don't find a ghost, at least you're checking out some cool historical place. So that's a great place to start in the paranormal.
Well, yeah, and, you know, and I through 3 years of doing this radio show, talked to hundreds of people across the country, and, you know, some of them are still new, so they still got, you know, they're still doing those type of things. And then there's people like me and other people out there that have been doing this for a while. We know that there is something going on. That we can't explain, you know, and we've had our share of experiences in these haunted locations, and we're still searching for those answers. So we're to the point of trying new things, you know, experiments and throwing out new ideas out there. And that's what I try to tell some of these groups is when you go to a historical location that lots and lots of teams have been to, say like Waverly. I mean, you know, you're paying money, you're going to that historical location. Why not use it to your advantage and try new things while you're there? You know, don't just do the stereotypical EVP session and walk around with a K2 meter and mail meter and all that stuff. You know, try some things out. Use that facility to the fullest, you know. Try to really understand.
That's why I want to investigate theme parks with roller coasters.
But you get what I'm saying, 3C. It's like, you know, you could use – you. There's so much more that teams could do when they go to some of these places. Now, I understand if you've never been there before, you know, you want to get – you want to do the thing you always do in every investigation. But even that, put some time aside and try some things, you know. Even try some stuff that have kind of disappeared through time as far as technology. Everybody's so technology-based nowadays and in our everyday lives and even in the paranormal. Why not try some stuff that paranormal investigators used prior to all this technology? And maybe use the new technology to monitor your environment while you're doing these experiments, you know?
That's excellent. That's an excellent way to look at it because back, you know, before these ghost hunter shows came on, people were using very basic tools. They, you know, maybe a camera or a film camera, maybe a recorder to record what was going on. But it was, you know, a pencil and paper, and they were just kind of getting the experience of what's going on. If you're not psychic, like I am not psychic, maybe try dowsing rods or pendulums or you know, I know a lot of people don't believe in Ouija boards or seances. I don't have a problem with them. Maybe just checking out the environment and just kind of sensing what's going on, being in the environment and seeing with your ears and your eyes and your senses what's happening. I think the problem with what's happened with the television shows is the focus has not been on the experience. It's been on the evidence. And I think they're missing out on the experience to try to capture evidence. And I think they're missing out on something that could be spectacular. And the way that I approach it and my partner Kathy approaches it, we don't really care about evidence. And when we're at a historical place, we are not trying to prove to anybody that a place is haunted because most likely if we're there, it's already been established that it's haunted. We're there for the experience. We want to find out for ourselves what's going on. We're trying to give a voice to the dead is what we like to say. So, yeah, man, try the old school techniques. Just sit and experience and see what happens. That's what we did when we were little, and that's when it was the most exciting. That's fun. You get too wrapped up in technology, and, you know, now you got your cell phone. It's got your smartphone. It has everything. You've got your EMF detector, your video voice recorder, a camera. You got everything you need right there on your phone. You never look up and experience what's going on.
Yeah. You know, one thing that because my team, we've been on hiatus now for actually a year. I can't believe that. Jeff, can you believe we've actually been kind of we haven't been doing much in a year. And it's already passed a year. But
it's been peaceful.
Yes, it has been peaceful. We dealt with a lot of crap internally with a few people, and since that's all been taken care of and we're very small now, and we even kind of removed ourselves from the paranormal conference, you know, being out in the public eye, you could say. And I'll tell you what, it's actually more enjoyable, you know, not having to deal with all the high school shenanigans that a lot of these people, that, you know, these grown folks, they're supposed to be grown, and they still act like we're in high school. You know, that's the stuff that we all experienced when we were in school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been nice. And, you know, like you said, me being the founder of my team, when we were going full steam and we would have an investigation, I hardly ever really got to have very many experiences paranormal-wise. I mean, I had several, but I think I would have had a lot more, and it'd have been a lot more enjoyable for me, and I'd probably got more out of it if I wasn't worrying about everything else, because I did the tech. You know, I had to make sure everybody was where they were going. So my mind was on the process of investigating more than the actual investigation itself. And so I think I've missed out on a lot. And so I'm kind of glad that everything has fallen the way it has, because I'm able to focus on what I'm in it for, you know, and not have to delegate and all that stuff.
Hey, you got to get your passion back. Taking a break is not a bad thing. That's a good thing. And you know, maybe go back to it and you'll be able to have more experiences. And God, I remember I used to lug so much equipment to these places. I'd bring in all these cameras and recorders and all these things. And then I realized, nobody's helping me review these four cameras. And that's four cameras run for 4 hours, 16 hours of video, plus audio with every camera. That's another 16 hours of audio, plus all the pictures I took. It's ridiculous. It's taken weeks to get back to the client or whoever we had. It was ridiculous. So we've really scaled down, except for certain cases, because you're missing out on it. You get so wrapped up. I mean, I understand why they do it for these television shows, but, you know, for someone like me, and really the Haunted Housewives is just me and Kathy. We do work with other people, but it's just the two of us. I'm not going to set up four cameras and a DVR system to do your two-story house. It's not going to happen, you know, unless the circumstances really demand it.
Right.
Definitely. And, you know, it's funny you mention that, because I remember one client in particular of a historical location, and we did a full-blown investigation. It was on the news, you know, and we did a live broadcast on the Internet on Ustream, put our cameras online, and we had like 3,000 people in the chat room watching our investigation. So it was a pretty big deal for this part of the area of Texas. So, you know, they were adamant about their evidence, getting it back to them. And there was probably, I think, last count that I had about 50 hours of video and audio to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where the whole team factor kind of started falling apart, because I ended up, as the founder of a group of 14 people, I ended up doing every bit of video and audio review. 50 hours of my personal time I put in, because I wanted to make sure that this client, you know, was taken care of. And the rest of the folks were enjoying their lives, per se, and not putting any effort into helping me. So I definitely know what that's like, and I do not miss that in least. I still remember, Jeff, you remember that first group before I started this team, the other team we were in, the Paranormal Hitler, we called him.
Yeah.
He would have us investigate on Saturday night. You know, we would be up late hours, whatnot, and then he would require us all to be back by like 10 or 11 or 12, Sunday, and stay over at his house and review every bit of evidence from the night before. And I'm just like, dude, I am worn the hell out. You know, my senses are not very good right now because I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to sit there. We were trying to listen to EVP sessions, and I kept falling asleep, you know, because he was trying to emulate what they do on the television show or what you see, you know. I seriously doubt they do all that reviewing right off the bat. Now, I know on Paranormal Challenge you had to, because, you know, they had to get it done, you know. So you guys investigated, and then you started doing your evidence review. But, you know, this was when Ghost Hunters was real big, and he was thinking, oh, yeah, we gotta get this evidence done. And I was just like, this is not going to work. I didn't sign up for this, you know.
Hell no. And you know what? Even on Ghost Hunters, it wasn't the next day that they went back to their clients. It was sometimes a week or 2 weeks later. Just through the magic of television, they make it seem like it's the next day. Now, on Paranormal Challenge, we left the night that we did the investigation, at least this is how it was for us. We left the venue at probably 3 or 4 in the morning. got back to the hotel, and we had to be back there by 9 o'clock. So we I can't get back. We had to be working by 9. We had to be back. So we got that night, we got probably maybe 3 hours of sleep. That was brutal.
Yeah.
But, you know, on Ghost Hunters, Zach and Nick and Aaron, they're not the ones who are reviewing. They don't do it. They used to. They are not the ones that do it. They've got Billy and Jay, and they got a bunch of other people that do that part of it for them. So what we've switched to now is the real-time EVPs, where we do a session and we play it back right away. That seems to work much, much better. We seem to get much better results. We can actually communicate. If we are getting activity, we're able to communicate with whoever it is that we believe we're talking to, and it's that immediate feedback. It's a much, much better way to investigate.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Let's see if I can do this real quick. While I got to pause, I need to play ours. I got to do my duty as host and owner of the network and play our sponsor, Mr. Chris Melanchon, who does the NOAA Ghost Tour down in New Orleans. If anybody's in the area, please go down there and check them out, because they're trying to do something great. It's not your typical ghost tour, and those guys really know their stuff, and they want the public to have their own paranormal experiences. And, you know, if you've never ghost hunted before, you can go with them, and you'll get to even use equipment. So let me play this real fast, and we'll be right back with more from Theresa. Now we'll see if it plays. We'll see if my internet's actually working.
Going to New Orleans for the weekend, for vacation? Are you wanting to take a ghost hunting tour but tired of the same old walking tours where you don't even get to go into the locations and you're not even sure if the history is accurate? Well, call NOAA Ghost Hunting Tours. This team of guys are going to take you into a real haunted location where you're going to get to use the state-of-the-art equipment that ghost hunters use. Be the paranormal investigator. You get to work with an experienced, competent team of investigators and have the real, true paranormal experience. Experience the dark side of New Orleans. Call NOAA Ghost Hunting Tours. They have tours Friday through Monday. Tours start at 7 and at 10 p.m. For more information, call 504-708-3567.
All right. And we're back.
That's pretty awesome.
7. Well, all right.
I love ghost hunting tours. I want to go to New Orleans and go on that ghost hunting tour. That sounds cool. I work for a ghost walk, so I understand that. You know, you get people from all over that come to the ghost walk, and ours is a little bit different. We actually take them into the places, and we'll run sessions and stuff with them. But I would love to go on your friend's New Orleans ghost walk. So when I go down there, I'll definitely be checking that out. I'll tell him you sent me.
Oh, Beth. Yeah. And, they're trying to do the same type thing you mentioned. They're actually going to take you in the locations. They're just not going to, you know, I've been on ghost tours where you just kind of walk by on the outside of the location, and they'll talk about the history and the ghost stories, and then that's it. And then you walk to the next location. I'm just like, I want to go in this place, because a lot of us, leading into what I want to talk about next, a lot of us not only are into the paranormal, but we're history buffs. We love old building and the history that comes with these places. I know I am, and I'd love the opportunity to go into some of these historical places that may not even be open to the public. I know down here in East Texas, Jeff and I got to go into an old hotel that they newly renovated, and they renovated it back to the way it was when it was built, and it was built in 1898. And so they put it back together, and five presidents actually stayed in the hotel. And there's actually a presidential suite. And so it was – and what was weird about that hotel was the second floor had all these rooms, and then you go down this wing, and you had the presidential area, and you had rooms for all his people. But if you went to the third floor, they had a working brothel.
Wait, where was this?
Marshall.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
The Ginocchio, look it up, the Ginocchio Hotel. Drew Barrymore's great-grandfather, John Barrymore, was actually shot out front of the hotel, and when he got wounded, he actually crawled in the lobby of the hotel. He didn't die, but there was a big trial, and it made national news. That's one example of, you know, they had the gentleman that owns it. He took old photographs of the way the hotel looked, and through some great architects that he worked with, he put everything back. If he couldn't find something that he could use, I don't even know how to talk about it, but if he couldn't find, say, a door from that time period that matched what was in the photograph, he would have his people build it from scratch to look exactly the way it was. So it's a beautiful place. But, just like you said, just like you were talking about, you're involved in historical places and helping them out.
Absolutely. That is our main focus. That is the one thing that we have found that we can do in the paranormal besides helping people who, think they might have a ghost. That is something really substantial that we've got into. Kathy is a historian. She was a historian long before she was a paranormal investigator. I kind of dragged her into the investigation part of it. But we have found that if you go in through the paranormal angle, that you can do a lot of good. I mean, there's a museum here in Ohio called the Fairport Lighthouse Museum, and it is a maritime museum, and it's an old lighthouse, and it was in bad shape. It was completely underfunded, and they were going to close it down. And this is like big history for this area of Ohio. I mean, it was a shame to see it go, but they just couldn't get the funding, and they didn't have people coming in. When they were doing renovations, they found a mummified cat under the floorboards, and and because of that, it got a lot of news coverage, and because of that, the stories of the hauntings came out, and sure enough, they found that there's a ghost cat in this place, and now that place is doing well. It's certainly stayed open. We have another local museum that the same thing, because of there's a Kachina doll that seems to move. There's these haunted artifacts in this museum that has saved these places from closing. So we concentrate on fundraisers for these historic buildings. We do one every year, a real big one, for the old poorhouse in Lake County. We do one for a farm that's out here near my neighborhood where I live, this old family farm. And because we brought in the paranormal world has basically saved these places from closing down. That saved the memories of these people who lived, worked, and died there. So it's a huge thing. And that's something I'm very proud of and we're very passionate about.
Oh, definitely. And a lot of these places, people don't realize it takes money to run these facilities, even just to keep them up from wear and tear from, years and years and years. And some of these places are about to fall down or be condemned, and I hate when I hear of an historical location getting torn down, All that history is gone.
It breaks my heart. It really does. It's so sad. I have no problem dishing out $50, $60, $80, $100, whatever it is, for these historical places, these super haunts, whatever you want to call them, if that money is going back to historic preservation, they can take my money. I don't have a problem with that. Consider it a donation. So I, for the privilege of being there and learning their history and maybe being able to speak to the spirits, I think that's great. I applaud it. You know, and there's people out there that they're lining their pocket. They own historic locations. Whatever. I mean, if that's fine, if that's what they want to do, if it's going to keep the place open and they're going to make a little bit of a profit out of it, that's okay as long as they preserve the history as much as they can. I'm not, you know, it's, people got a business. We don't make money in the paranormal. Nobody's paying us to ghost hunt unless you're on TV. So, you know, I understand, but the historical part, Wave of Hills, you know, it, a lot of these places we'd never even know about if it wasn't for the paranormal. I knew nothing about the history of tuberculosis in our country until I started researching Waverly Hills. And at one point, tuberculosis affected everyone. Either you knew somebody with tuberculosis or somebody in your family died from it. I mean, it was huge, millions of people. And my generation knew nothing about it. So I'm glad that these stories are coming to life now, and it's through the paranormal angle.
So,
oh, exactly.
Now that I'm not driving and home and can actually participate in the show, you know, like I would like to take a step back in the history of things and preservation of history. Even if it, like, nothing paranormal is going on or there is paranormal activity or whatever, I think the preservation of a historical location is extremely important for future generations that will come to know what we experience, to know what we've been through or what our ancestors have been through. Granted, I do understand that life has to continue, that, yeah, unfortunately, those places do have to be torn down to build new facilities for other things. But I completely agree in the, if we have the opportunity and the place is struggling and the owners and the facilitators, you know, they're passionate, they care, they want to keep it going. They don't want to be strong-armed into getting rid of it. That's, well, you know, you should know from Paranormal Challenge, you know who Ursula Bielski is, right?
Yes, from Chicago, absolutely. I've taken her ghost tour.
Yes, that is my dear, 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 dear friend. She investigates with me all the time. Her and I have attempted to save a couple locations, and we put on events, and we've done this, that, and the other thing, and poured blood, sweat, and tears, and all of our own personal money into a place. And unfortunately, a couple locations ended up still going under, but we did save a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a lot of that, like, in the Chicago areas. We'll put on fundraisers. We'll put on, you know, whatever kind of events that we can get going that people stand behind and to see these historical, awesome places.
Yeah, I like Ursula's. I really respect her work, and I've read many of her books, and I know she was doing a lot to preserve the Bachelor's Grove Cemetery, and I applaud her for her work. I mean, it's tough. But I tell you, it's amazing the people that you will get interested in. I took Ursula's tour, and Adam was our tour guide. You know, Adam. And
Adam Solder.
Took the bus and went around the city, and it was a lot of fun. It really was. It was very entertaining. It was a lot of fun. But you know, and I'm glad she does that. I'm glad that she's got a business that does that. Good for her. But you know, it's the other part of what she does that I think really she should be applauded for, and that is her work trying to bring people to see see this other side that's so important. It can be fun and games, but, man, this is serious. This is our history, especially in the United States, where we only have a couple, 200-300 years of history, you know, and we're losing it. It's really sad. So I applaud her. Really.
She's an absolute sweetheart, and she's not one of those people that's like, oh, well, no, I've been on TV, I've written books, and I'm not going to talk to you. She will talk to anybody at any time. Same thing with Adam Seltzer, who is an amazing historian.
He's so funny, too. He's very funny.
No, he is. And that dude will seriously grind until his nails fall out of his hands because just to get the honest truth and weed through the crap of history. Like, he is definitely a grinder, and he knows his stuff very well. I mean, between he and Ursula, to sit like I was at a party at Ursula's house, I think it was, what, a month ago or something like that? But just sitting and hearing her and Adam talk, it was like mind-blowing. I mean, Ursula has three masters in history and different ends. Adam, very, very, very well accredited by the city of Chicago as a registered historian. So you sit and listen to them talk, and it's like, wow, I respect where I live so much more because of you two. It's not just the crap that you hear on the news and the stuff that you have. It's honestly amazing. For people who know and love and care and respect their city or their environment or whatever it be, and actually take the time and do the work to hear it, it honestly changes your opinion.
And, you know, the thing with historians, and you probably appreciate this, and I'm sure Adam and Ursula can, a lot of the history does not match up with the myth, especially with some of these places and with hauntings. And part of what we do in the paranormal, at least what I do, is you want to get to the truth of what's happening, not to really, like, blow the top off anything, but just because it makes for a better understanding of what really happened. When I was writing this book, and my book will be out on September 30th, and we did in-depth research at all the locations, I should say, I did in-depth research at all the locations that I went to that are featured in the book, and in almost every single case, I found that the facts do not line up with the myth, with the legend of these places. But it doesn't discount or discredit the fact that they are haunted. It just makes you think, well, maybe people are kind of going in the wrong direction. So it's very, very interesting. I think with the reputation of some of these haunted places, it becomes like a game of telephone where one story is passed on to another story and that's passed on to someone else, then they pass on the story, and things get changed and they mutate. And then a psychic comes in and says something, and then the story changes. Then a paranormal team comes in, and they're interpreting their ETs a certain way. It's kind of amazing that we found in the book that the truth was much more fascinating than the myth. So it made me look at things totally differently. So now when I go into a haunted location, my research is 10 times what it used to be, trying to find out the truth. You're sitting in there doing an EVP session at a haunted location, and you've been told that it's haunted by a little girl named Sarah who drowned when she was 12, and then you come to find out that there was never anybody there by that name. No one ever drowned there. So what is it that people are experiencing? Who is it on the EVP? What spirit are they talking to? I mean, it's fascinating. The whole thing is just absolutely intriguing.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. Who's the one that has the fan going on in the background or something?
Oh, it's me.
All I hear is wind.
It's my fan making noise for me. Get it?
I have no fans.
I have one, but it's turned off right now because it doesn't like me.
I have no fans. I did have a stalker, though, but other than that, that's about it.
I've had stalkers, and I thought I was going to die.
Not a good thing.
I don't get it.
There were awkward silence there, like, should I laugh at that? Is Jeff being real, or is he being an ass?
I normally go to the ass end of things, but I wasn't sure.
That's usually a safe assumption with me.
Now, Theresa, everybody's got a, in the paranormal field, everybody's got a bucket list, per se, of places that they've never been that they one day would love to go investigate or at least walk through, whatever it might be. What's on your bucket list of places?
I got a huge bucket list, but probably the first place I'd like to go that I've never been to, I would say, would be the Stanley Hotel. I have not been there. It is in my book. I did extensive research on that, and I did get enough information and stories that I don't think I really needed to be there to write a good chapter about the Stanley, but it's very intriguing to me, a lot of because of the myth versus what's really going on there. Another place I've never been to is Pennhurst, which I would like to go to sometime soon, hopefully, because hopefully that will be in my next book. And then, oh, my God, there's so many places. I'm just trying to think off the bat. There's places on the West Coast that I've never been to. I've never been to, there's a place in Washington, Manresa Castle, I'd love to go to. That place is intriguing to me, and I'd love to dig into the history of that place and find out. But you know what? New Orleans. Been to New Orleans, didn't get to ghost hunt there, and I tell you, I want to tear that city up. The history of that city is fascinating to me. I'd love to go to New Orleans.
Oh, yes.
Hey, Outlaw, can I share what's at the top of my bucket list?
I don't know if I want to know.
You know this.
Oh, God. Oh, here we go. Yeah, go ahead.
Top of my bucket list, number one, the Titanic.
The Titanic?
Yeah, not the Titanic Museum in Missouri. The Titanic.
Underwater investigation, huh?
Yes. So they got submersibles. We can go down there.
Interesting.
That's right.
Wow.
I've actually talked to a bunch of people that have done that. Not the Titanic, but underwater investigations. And
see?
It's pretty interesting.
Outlaw, you've been calling me crazy for years now for wanting to do that. Face.
Oh, Jeff, you are crazy.
Well, there's no doubt I'm crazy, but he was calling me crazy for that reason.
Yeah.
I'd imagine some of the artifacts that have been brought up from the Titanic might have the same energy as what's the remainder of what's left of the ship. So I think maybe the museum might be able to be a good place to get some sort of paranormal activity. I don't know. That's really interesting. I personally would not want to go and do an investigation underwater because I would freak out putting a scuba mask on, but that's me. And I'm a little claustrophobic, and I don't think I could do it. But
I want one of those suits like what they wore in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Oh, man, those things are brutal.
You just get me that and a waterproof tape recorder, we're good to go.
Wow, can you imagine that? Your EVP session with your heavy breathing sound like Darth Vader.
Yeah, but can you imagine how cool it'd be to get an EVP that goes...
That would be cool. That sounds like an interesting concept for a show.
Yes. I can do
paranormal investigators.
Paranormal comedy sitcom. Yes. Number two.
Teresa, also, the one place that I would put on your bucket list to check out is the Exchange Hotel, which is in, I think it's Gordonsville, Virginia.
The Exchange Hotel. Never heard of that one.
That, like, seriously, check out that place. It was a Civil War hospital. What's really cool about it is on one side of the building you had Union soldiers. On the other side you had Confederate soldiers that were guarding the rooms. It was, like, right on the border between it. It was a hospital. Now it's a hotel. There is some amazing stuff that comes out of that place. Between visuals, audio, like, just everything as a whole. And the nice thing is the woman who runs the place, she won't charge to have you go in there and investigate.
You're kidding.
No,
she doesn't charge people to investigate?
Nope.
Oh my goodness, God! I'm actually on their website right now because I was so intrigued. But because Virginia's not that far from Ohio, and you know what? I see they do ghost walks there, and they do these reenactments. And I always wonder. I wonder if these reenactors and doing the ghost walks and dressing up. I wonder if that stirs up activity that. The period dress and everything they do. I know that that is different teams have called it different things, Aricues or reenactments or different names for it. But I would imagine that it's a good way to stir up some activity. It looks beautiful. It looks fascinating. I have to put that one on. Yeah, man, my bucket list would be a mile long. Unfortunately, until somebody's going to pay me some big bucks, I have to be very careful of the places I can actually get to. Right now, I've got to narrow down my bucket list to places I can get to for my next book because, I don't know, if you realize that you don't really make a lot of money when you write a book.
Well, that's where, you know, Dennis, who I do a show with on Wednesday night, Full Spectrum Radio, he lives in Richmond. Also, like, he and Ryan from Twisted Paranormal and Howard from All Seen Paranormal, that's one of, like, their main places that they go to because they get such amazing information and amazing evidence that comes out of that place. Also, it's kind of cool that, you know, you have All Seen, you have Twisted Paranormal, and you have CPR. All of them work together. And everybody sees that, all right, this isn't one team. This is three teams that are in here. And everybody's working together. Everybody's choreographed and getting along, and there's no BS, and everybody has different styles, and everybody agrees with it. So it is really cool in that aspect to see, one, everybody getting along, two, the different styles, and everybody sees what comes out of that with all the different styles of when they host public events and, you know, that kind of thing.
That's great when you can get a bunch of people together that agree. I know that a lot of people in our field are very territorial and they think that their way is the only way. And I tell you, if I had that policy, I would never be doing this because the way I approach things, the way I do things has changed. It's evolved over the last seven, 8 years. I mean, things that I used to never do, I do now, and things that I used to do, I would never do now. So I've been pretty lucky. I just kind of, hey, you do your thing, I'll do my thing, as long as you're respecting the people and the place and you're not disrespecting the spirit, I'm okay with however you want to do your thing. But I think it's very rare that you get a bunch of people together that will agree and work together. So it sounds like a really good group you've got going there that do that. That's great. Sounds like people I'd like to meet.
Yeah, and first off, it's CPR Dennis, who is basically started my satellite team in Virginia. Because Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers in Virginia didn't make much sense. So it's CPR East is what we decided to call it. I wasn't planning on actually reaching out to different areas. Three of the team members on CPR East are law enforcement and or military. So kind of they're very thorough. Howard, who runs All Seen Paranormal, it's Howard O'Dell, or Ryan C. Jones, who is Twisted Paranormal. So if you look up any of them, that great group of people. Kevin, you know those guys too.
Oh, yes.
That's great. You got law enforcement, like police officers?
I'm sorry?
You have law enforcement, you mean like police officers that investigate the paranormal?
Yeah.
That's great. My husband's a cop, and he doesn't believe in ghosts.
Yeah. She won't let you?
Well, no, you can.
He thinks I'm crazy.
Seriously, you'd be amazed on the stories that the precincts or whatever, whatever house will get, because I have other friends who are law enforcement as well, and they say, yeah, we get some crazy-ass calls of shit going on all the time, but we can't report it. So lights turning on and off, people walking around in a house that's been abandoned or a dwelling that's been non-habited for years. Like, oh yeah, we got reports that there's, you know, five or six people walking around. Well, no, that's not possible. The place is locked up. It's amazing how many calls that police stations get about paranormal activity that the law enforcement officer on duty can't report.
Or they won't go on record. We've had interviews when I was doing research for my book. We got some great stories from some police officers. They absolutely would not let us use the name. They would not go on record. But they, you know, they said they'd be laughed out of the department, even though other people have had experiences. I guess it just depends on the department. But, you know, they're like, well, people would think I'm crazy, even though maybe other people have had the experience. So I think it's great that they would be very forward and come out with that. That's awesome. I wish that more would, but, I mean, I understand they have an image to upkeep, but it's not like it was 50 years ago. You know, I think most people have had a paranormal experience of some sort. Maybe they just don't want to admit it.
I would agree with that. That's well, all right, even two of my extremely dear friends, and Kevin and Jeff, one of the two, I was talking to Bruce Tango earlier, and Bruce used to be, and actually, in a way, is still law enforcement, but it's really cool when you talk to him about certain things when it has to do with, like, method and what a law enforcement officer has been trained to do of canceling out, like, basically all the crap.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear a report from a law enforcement person, the other person I was talking about is Ray Johnson. Another one, Ron Saviani, who was Paranormal Cops.
Yeah.
They're just they're great people to talk to as far as what, you know, canceling or forming a method and canceling out all the stuff that the normal person who watches a TV show wouldn't do. You know what I mean? So, everybody in the paranormal field, talk to a local cop and see what they would do on an investigation and get an idea from that other than a TV show.
I wish that show was still on. I really like that Paranormal Cop show. They were a bunch of interesting guys. I like their approach. I just applauded them for not really giving a crap of what people thought about them for being cops and talking about it. Because I tell you, it's not the ones that I've met. They won't talk about it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, in that realm, it's not exactly acceptable.
Now, Theresa, have you ever been to Athens, Ohio?
Oh yeah, I've been to Athens. OU is. Well, I wasn't really ghost hunting when I was there, but you know, I've been there. For big college, a lot of people in my area go down to college there. And my good friend John Kachuba, if you know him, the ghost hunter, he writes a lot of books. He's from the Athens area. He lives in Cincinnati now, but he used to teach there. He's a professor there, so he's very familiar with it. You know, it's not really open investigations anymore, like the ridges that people used to go to, but a very interesting place. I think a lot of college campuses are haunted, though. OU just has a reputation because of the area and all the different cemeteries, and it's supposed to form a pentagram, and it has this really wild reputation about it. I'm not really sure, except for a couple stories that come out of the ridges, which was like the mental hospital there. I'm not really sure it's really any more haunted than any other university. University of Cincinnati was haunted. Cleveland State University is haunted. I think most college campuses have paranormal activity going on.
Oh, yeah. You know, interesting about Athens, that's where I grew up, and both my parents were born there. My brother was born there. And I remember growing up, there's a park at the – I don't know if it's still there. I haven't been to Athens in years and years and years, but there was a park at the bottom of the hill where the ridges is, and I remember, and it was open then. It was a fully functional mental hospital back then, and I remember hearing women screaming, just loud screaming coming from the hill up there. And, you know, I'm 4 or 5 years old, and I remember asking my dad, you know, what's that all about? And he's like, oh, you know, I mean, he really didn't sugarcoat it for me. He said, you know, that's a place for where they put crazy people, you know. And you know, as a kid, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, and kind of went about my business as a kid. But I still remember that because it was just so, you know, I just remember that scream, you know, from childhood. And Dad worked for the phone company there, and he had to go to the ridges a lot to work on their phone line. And he had some experiences in there, paranormal, and of course running into some of the patients that were there as well. But that place not only has the history, but it also has a history of Indian settlements as well. So I don't know if that you know, what that coincides with the paranormal as well. You know, some say that Ohio University is built on some Indian burial grounds. Who knows? But, I agree with college campuses. I know Jeff attended a college that had a lot of activity. I went to a school where there's a lot of activity in the theater that I was in because I was a theater major. I still remember being ready to go to class, and you walk in the double doors, and you get on the elevator, and you go to the third floor, and that's where the classrooms were for your theater classes. And I remember climbing in, getting in the elevator, pressing three, door closer. You know, you get that motion you feel as the elevator's going up, right? So it feels like the elevator's going up, the door's open, and I'm still on the first floor. You know, I was like, okay, that's the last time I take the elevator. I took the stairs the rest of the time I was there. Because it was stuff like that happened. You know, I would be in the building late at night and have to go down to the prop room, and which is underneath the stage, and we called it the caves because it was dirt, and, you know, it was just like a catacomb down there, and you hear the craziest stuff going on down there, and there's no one down there. Oh, yeah.
Hey, Jeff, I definitely like your text.
I'd love to get a kick out of that.
And Mr. Dennis is listening to the show, and he's already poked fun at me when I was talking about my childhood experience with the Ridges. He said, was that in the 20s or 30s?
Oh. Well,
you're going to leave a mark, though. Think about that. You're hearing screams when you're a child. That would probably creep me out, happen to hear that, especially knowing that it was right down the street or next door. But what kills me about hearing these places that are haunted because they were built on an Indian burial ground, now think about that statement and think about where we live in the United States. Our entire country is built on an Indian burial ground because there were nothing but Indians or Native Americans here before we came in and destroyed everything and built our houses and cities on top of their living cities, their communities, and their burial ground. So the entire nation is built on an Indian burial ground, if you ask me. So maybe that's why it's haunted. Who knows? But I always thought that was very funny. Reminds me of poltergeists.
Yeah. Exactly. What do you have going on this year? What do you you got any thing events that your fundraisers that you're doing for some of these historical places?
Absolutely, we got a lot of stuff going on this year. The Willoughby Ghost Walk that I work with Kathy, that starts up in the summer, so we're already starting that. We're also doing a lot of the book promotion for the book. My book, America's Most Haunted, is coming out on September 30th. So through the book, we are going to be doing a lot of appearances. We're doing a big fundraiser at the Lake County Historical Society, which is the Lake County Poorhouse here in Ohio. And Michelle Belanger from Paranormal State, she comes every year as our guest speaker. Jim Harrell from the Paranormal Podcast says he's coming. We got a couple other people lined up. We usually get a few people to come celebrity-wise. We also have a Greenwood Farms fundraiser. We're going to be doing an event at the Knickerbocker Hotel in Lionsville, PA. We're going to try to organize an event at Willoughby Cole, which is a local haunted place, which is covered in my book. And we're working on getting something going at Bobby Mackey's as well. So lots of stuff going on. And those are just the big ones. Lots of little events, too. We do tours to a haunted warehouse down in Canal Fulton. So lots going on. You just got to keep checking the Facebook page and the America's Most Haunted page for updates on what we have going on. But as soon as the book comes out, I'm going to be really busy, probably all through fall and through the beginning of winter. One of the haunted places here in Ohio that you haven't mentioned, I don't know if you've ever been there, is the Ohio State Reformatory. So we will be doing an event there. Unfortunately, the reformatory closes at the end of August because they run it out for a haunted house. So other than a few private events that they do in the winter, they're closed until spring after the haunted house leaks. So, but we'll be doing something there when it reopens again, too.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely one of mine that's on my bucket list of places to go. I want to go there.
It's unbelievable. It's an amazing place. I volunteer there as well, so I spent a lot of time there in the past. That is the most active place I have ever been. And I've been there a lot, too, so maybe that has something to do with it. But I tell you, it's an amazing place. It's beautiful. It's creepy. It has a little bit of everything. It's scary. It's the TV shows, and it's been on pretty much all of them. It doesn't hold its justice. You have to see that place to believe it. It's really amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of places. There's lots of places down here in Texas. There's way too many to even probably even get into in my lifetime. I've been to some really great locations down here. With Texas, there's a lot of historical places, you know, involving either A, Indians, or B, when we had our struggles with Mexico. So I wish I could do an investigation of the Alamo, but that'll never happen because they don't do those there, you know. But
you know where
I would love to.
You know where we need to investigate, don't you?
What's that?
The White House.
That might be a little difficult to get into.
What?
That might be a little difficult to get into. I'd love to go to Texas and check out some of these places.
Surely for somebody it's just a phone call.
Not for me.
It's always a phone call, but it hadn't there been a book out, Jeff? I know you and I talked about it one time. Isn't there, I know there's been accounts by past presidents and people that have worked in the White House of paranormal experiences they've had.
There is a book called Haunted Presidents. I have that book. So there's some stuff going on there, and it's just a matter of finding who has the right connection to get us in to the White House.
I do not have those connections, so keep looking.
Well, you make a phone call or two and find out who does for me, then get back to me.
I don't have a lot of connections anywhere, honestly.
I can't investigate our governor's mansion here because I'm pretty sure he's got me on some kind of watch list of people that hate him.
I wouldn't be surprised.
While I'm not exactly a fan of this president, at least I don't hate him like I do Dick Perry.
yeah. to back up a little bit, one other place, when we were talking about, unfortunately, we were talking about Jeff's Titanic investigation, the Titanic Museum in Branson, Missouri. It is very highly haunted. I still want to. We were supposed to go when we were with this other team, but apparently the money that we had all put in for this trip at the last minute turned up missing, supposedly stolen. So we never got to go. But they sent us a they sent us a packet, and they had a log book.
Yeah, a log book
of visitors that have come through there, because they have the artifacts that the very first artifacts that were pulled off of the ship they have at this museum, and they've actually the museum itself is the front half of the Titanic, as far as they reconstructed the Titanic. So the front half of the ship is what you see when you pull up to the museum. And this logbook is every paranormal experience that workers, volunteers, anybody that's ever been there, they write in this book. And they sent it to us. And some of the stuff is just crazy. You know, they talk about the housekeepers, you know, the people, the cleaning people that go in there at night, and the deck where the where the captain's deck is, where the steering wheel of the ship and all that is, it's actually wooden floor, and they got like plexiglass or whatever on the front of it. Well, at night, you know, they'll go in there and they'll clean it. And then in the morning, there'll be children's handprints all over the outside of the glass. And on the deck itself, there'll be footprints, water footprints, like somebody had just gotten out of the water. And they have to clean them up every night. And they have so much activity, it's just unreal the amount of stories. So, you know, those artifacts probably have a lot of energy, and from most of the activity that Jeff and I read about, you know, it's mainly residual. I'm sure there's some intelligent hauntings there. I can't really say because I haven't been, but, you know, a lot of the stuff is, you know, tied into when they were actually on the ship as far as some of the stuff going on there, but... Yeah, if anybody ever goes to Branson, Missouri, definitely go check that place out. My parents went to Branson, and they took the tour there, and they said the place, you know, just the tour itself to see the stuff that was on the ship is just absolutely amazing.
You know, that's really cool. I've never seen any of the Titanic exhibits or anything. I'd like to see that, but ships like the Queen Mary or the Salem, or they're haunted ships are amazing. There's a similar story coming out of the Queen Mary in Long Beach about footprints, children's footprints, wet footprints being seen in the pool area. It makes you wonder, is it the ship or is it the artifacts in the ship? I mean, you don't know. It's fascinating. I would love to check that out. I would love to check out all these other ships. I've done the Queen Mary, but I've never done any other of these big ships. I think it would be interesting to find out what's really going on. It makes you wonder, you know?
Well, this year is the 99th anniversary, and next year is the 100th, and we're going to be doing a lot in the Chicago area for it. Ursula and I, we definitely pay homage to the people that died on the Eastland, which capsized in the Chicago River. It was, if I remember right, it was 878 deaths. It was the second largest maritime disaster in recorded history.
That's an amazing story. Yep. The Eastland disaster is, and that's something that not a lot of people know about.
No, and I don't understand it. Like, I spent all day on my boat today. That's where I was driving home from. And every single time that I pass the section of the Chicago River, there's only one small plaque that's like a 10 by 12 plaque. There's no monument. There's no anything.
This thing sank while it was docked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, I mean, not amazing like awesome, but that's just...
It's incredible to think about it. And then when you think about all the people, all the families that died, all the entire families that were wiped out, and And from taking Ursula's tour, you know, we got a little bit of history because we went to the site where the Eastland went
right.
down, and you hear about all the places that they had to use for makeshift morgues and
mm-hmm.
and all the different spirits that are connected with the waters. And it's really fascinating. And people who are not familiar with Chicago or maybe not familiar with the paranormal do not know about it. And it was a huge loss of life.
It's the worst. 844 people died, and is the worst shipwreck tragedy from any of the Great Lakes.
Yeah, and everybody knows about the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Mhm.
Mhm.
But nobody knows about the Eastland.
Was that 27 or 29 men died on the Edmund Fitzgerald, as opposed to over 800?
Yeah.
In fact, that lighthouse I was telling you about that here in the Fairport Arbor lighthouse with the ghost kitty, they found the mummified cat, and they have a maritime museum there, and they have artifacts and they have displays that commemorate lots of these different disasters, and one is obviously the Edmund Fitzgerald, and they do have something up there for the Eastland disaster as well. That was kind of a way of life back then, too, with shipping. It was a dangerous, dangerous way to be. But, you know, when you're a longshoreman and you work on these boats, that's a chance you take. When you're a family out for an afternoon outing, you don't expect to lose your life in the Chicago River before you lose port. So, huge difference there.
I'm looking at the boat's Wikipedia article, and it's I mean, I've heard about this, but I've not done much research into it. It was later salvaged and then actually used as a gunboat during World War II.
Yes.
Or a training vessel, actually.
That is absolutely correct.
Where is the ship now? I wonder where it is.
That I have no idea.
I wonder. Let me look here. Sold to the Hyman Michaels Company for scrapping, which was completed in 1947. So, no, it doesn't even exist anymore. That sucks.
You hear about that pieces and parts from airplanes that have gone down that have been repurposed, and other airplanes or other ships have reported hauntings. There's a very, very popular story about an airline that went down in the swamps in the Everglades, and pieces and parts of that airplane were put into other airplanes, and then the staff, the flight attendants and pilots were reporting that they were seeing the co-pilot or the pilot from that downed plane that perished in that plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
And once they removed the refurbished parts, it never happened again. That's an incredible story, and it makes you wonder about spiritual attachment to objects when you hear about that.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Dennis in the chat room, CPR Dennis, Matt's co-host on Wednesday, he's got a question, Theresa. Have you, being from Ohio, are you familiar with the Northwest Ohio and urban legend?
Is that a team?
No, there's an urban legend in Northwest Ohio. I know what he's talking about. I can't relay exactly what he's talking about as far as the details and all that stuff goes, but I do know what he's hinting
okay,
at.
Okay, here it is. He said, ask if she's familiar with the Screamy Mimi Bridge.
No,
I've never heard of that.
I've never heard of it. I have heard of Crybaby Bridge, which I found that there is a Crybaby Bridge in every state.
Yep, state, too.
Just about every location there's a Crybaby Bridge. I am not familiar with that. It's I'd like to hear more about it, though. It sounds interesting.
Speaking of the dead and Dennis and all that stuff, Teresa, if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to ask you a favor on this.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that is dear to Dennis and my heart as far as somebody who is no longer with us. Her name is Brittany Nicole Farrago. Brittany was a extremely, extremely sweet girl. Put it this way, as the law states it, she ended her life. She had a single gunshot wound behind her left ear that they say was self-inflicted. She was sitting upright in a chair and the gun was in front of her. Anybody who does physics or anybody who just has a brain could understand a gun has recoil. The gun would be behind her, if anything. And also, why would a right-handed person shoot themselves behind their left ear? So there is a campaign that we're trying to do and supporting along with her aunt and everything called it's hashtag Justice for Brittany. We're trying to get the case reopened as a homicide case instead of a suicide case. She doesn't need to be known as offing herself, and also her parents, her family, who have been presented with, she committed suicide. They're not on board with that idea at all.
Yeah, that's a horrible thing, and it doesn't sound very likely at all. When we were doing research for the book, we ran into a similar case that was reported. A woman died by a gunshot wound, and the official reports said that it was accidental. And then we talked to gun experts, and they said the chances of that happening, the way it was presented, are nothing is really impossible, but highly unlikely. And there was a lot of things happening with the investigation that didn't make sense. That was one of those things we found while investigating. So I hope that you get attention and you get this case reopened, because that's a horrible thing, especially for a family. What if their religious beliefs are against suicide? You know, and my religious faith believes that suicide is a mortal sin. And if my parents thought that I committed suicide and I did not, that would be a terrible, terrible legacy to leave them. So, yeah, I've got a link. I'll post it on our Facebook page and I'll spread the word, and hopefully we can help get some attention to that.
Yeah, it's the hashtag is Justice for Brittany, and the hashtag is Justice for Brittany, I believe. She spelled it different. Well, her parents spelled it different, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
My phone is not loading right now, so I'll get the actual spelling in a moment.
Yeah, get it. Send me all the information you have on that, and we'll put a little thing up on the Facebook and Twitter, and that's a shame. You know, I hate to hear of any young life being taken anyway, whether it's by their own choice or not. Certainly don't want it to be reputed that this poor girl took her life if you strongly believe that she did not. That would be a horrible, horrible thing as a parent to have to go through.
That's the big thing is I don't want it to, you know what I mean? Like, she honestly was such a sweet girl that, and did a lot, was extremely, extremely caring. And now, even the prosecuting attorney on the case, or the main attorney, wants it reopened.
Mm-hmm.
But the judge deemed it as a suicide, so that's where it sits. All right, it's hashtag justice for Brittany, BRITTNEY.
And this was she in the Chicago area, or?
No, she's in Virginia.
Virginia, okay.
But yeah.
Wow.
Go ahead, Kevin. With your fan blowing in the background right into the mic.
Now, we have about 4 minutes left, and I wanted to make sure Theresa gets anything out there she wants to plug, websites or events or any of that, before our live time is off.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, we're all over Facebook. I would really appreciate if people would go to the America's Most Haunted Facebook page. That's Facebook.com/AMHaunted. I have all the information on things that I'm doing and the Haunted House Live links up there. And our book, America's Most Haunted, is coming out September 30th, Penguin Press, Grant House. Hopefully that will do well. And our website, americasmosthaunted.com. All sorts of stories. We're always looking for submissions. If you have a story or a comment or anything, to check it out. So check out America's Most Haunted on Facebook, or me, Teresa RG, the Haunted House Life on Facebook, Twitter, @AMHaunted. We have 270,000 Twitter followers. So we'll hashtag justice for Brittany, and hopefully we'll get some more followers for that as well.
That's awesome. I definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking time out to talk with us.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun. It makes me want to go back to Chicago and check out Texas. I'll tell you, I want to put a place in Texas and New Orleans in my next book, and, of course, Chicago. So I could talk to you for hours just about Chicago and things that happened there. So maybe we can do that another time.
Yeah, just shoot me a message on Facebook at CPR Matt, and we'll set up a time that we can – you don't even have to come here. We can have a conversation with Ursula. I'll just drive down, meet up with Ursula. Let's do a phone convo.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be really cool. Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun talking to you guys. Thank you for having me on. And I hope to get down to both of your areas soon, because Texas and Chicago, man, there's some cool things going on there. I've kind of worn out Ohio, so I'm ready to spread my wings.
If you come to Texas, come here in the fall or winter, because it's hot as hell right now.
It's hot. Summer just started, too. We're only the second day of summer.
In Texas, summer begins around the middle of February.
Yeah, we had snow in May here in Ohio, so.
Yeah, I would love that.
It's been rough. I like the cold weather, but.
I love
it. Yeah. Well, you have to come back to Ohio sometime. So.
Go back to Ohio.
And I tell you, if I get anywhere near Texas or Chicago or anything for my book, I'll definitely hook you guys up, and you can take me to your favorite local haunts.
There you go.
Sure. Oh, of course.
Got to do it. All right. Well, thanks for the time. Thanks for letting me plug my book. And it's been a pleasure talking to you guys. I wish you luck. And look me up on Facebook, everybody, and we'll post the link to the show and everything else you got going on.
All right. Well, you have a great night.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot, and have a great week. Take care.
Okay. Night.
You too.
Outlaw, how come you never tell me to have a great night?
Because we don't wish that.
You son of a, I was not talking to you.
No fighting, boys. All right, hey, good dude. Night.
All right, good night.
Yeah. Jeff, you opened the door or had to walk through it?
Matt, you speak what you're spoken to. Just remember that. I need to start up a hashtag. Hashtag tour bus for Jeff.
That
you have
1 hour.
You're yourself.
You know what?
So if you want to have a tour bus to where you talk to yourself, then that's fine. Just don't waste the money.
Well, I don't do the whole Twitter thing, so I do the hashtags on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. You're still going to be by yourself.
He's going to be following himself.
I've actually got a Twitter, but the last time I checked it was like 3 years ago. I just didn't care.
Yeah.
And that leaves us with me. There is a hashtag for the network. URN Radio is on Twitter. You can follow us there. And every time one of the shows is broadcasting, a link goes to that Twitter account. So you can click on the link there and enjoy a wonderful show. You know, every night of the week.
There's now
Monday,
a hashtag, there's now a hashtag Plus for Jeff on Facebook.
Oh, God.
It's a thing now.
I will start that for you.
I already started it. It's a thing.
Tour bus for Jeff, huh?
Yep.
Only other thing, make sure you tune in tomorrow for Fast Radio right here on the network. And Tuesday we have a special celebration, 2-year anniversary of Terrify Radio. I just text my old co-host and running buddy, Jody Parks, to see if she can call in at some point Tuesday night because I miss talking to her.
Oh,
I
just had the most brilliant idea of my life, and I've had a lot of brilliant ideas, so this is pretty big. I could do like one of those Kickstarter funds for the tour bus.
Oh, God.
Or how about you just literally be quiet right now?
Right. Because I was in the middle of a plug. So that we can wrap this show up.
But I had a brilliant.
So, yeah. Well, you just keep that brilliant idea to yourself at this point.
It's out there now.
You notice during the summer months, Matt, this is the kind of Jeff we get. Because Jeff is not all tired and, oh, crap, I gotta go to work tomorrow. So you get the chipper Jeff. And then when school starts, he'll go back to saying a little bit at the beginning of the show, and then you don't hear anything till the end.
It's like that for 10
years. Yeah, and then he's like the drugged-up sleepy Jeff at the end of the show. So Matt, now we have to deal with this Jeff for a couple months. Yeah.
That is perfectly fine with me. I actually like this Jeff more than boring Jeff.
Yeah, exactly.
There is no variation of Jeff that's boring. There is this Jeff, and then there's more subdued Jeff.
Well, that's what I mean, subdued Jeff.
There you go.
But when you're in your school med, you're definitely not as fun. Put it this way, during the show, I would not have gotten a text message, and verbatim, it says, I hear, makes me laugh because I know what the hell it says, It says, I hear women screaming everywhere I go, but I ain't, but it ain't paranormal.
Matt, get ready for text during the show. I've dealt with this for 3 years. My text tonight, and then I'm going back to my plug for Tuesday night, but what Jeff's text tonight was, do you want to eat some potato salad out of my ass? That's verbatim. That's during the show, and he always does that. He has impeccable timing because I'm in the middle of trying to listen to our guest and come up with more questions, and then I look down at my phone and see this wonderful text, and it just completely just screws me up. Sometimes, when and here's a little secret to everybody listening to our show, when you hear me kind of stutter or go, man, I just lost train of thought, that's because I just saw the text, and it got quiet at that moment when the guest finished my question and I'm about to ask something and I look down and read that text and then everything goes out the door. I've lost it.
Here's another one for you. I got one at 3:36 a.m.
yeah.
That says, dude, I found a recipe for marshmallows that lets me use my own sperm. What in the fuck was going on at 3:36 a.m.? And he said, oh, I had to text Matt this.
Oh, yeah, just get ready. Yeah. I don't know where he comes up with this stuff, but he's never repetitive with what he sends you in a text. It's always something new and fresh.
If I am repetitive, though, I don't do it like this 2 weeks in a row.
No. There's always something. And he used to do this with Martin as well. He would send us texts during the show. you might, and I felt bad for some of the guests because they might be talking about something serious, and then one of us is laughing. It's because we're reading the text. So,
honestly, I love it. Dennis and I do the same shit. We'll message. It's not text message, but it's Facebook message. We'll message each other back and forth and try and make the other person crack up when something serious is going on.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But back to my little plug so that we can get out of here, because I got to get to bed. I've been up since 3:30 this morning. And no, it had nothing to do with that text. I had to get up to go to a bass tournament this morning. So I knew as soon as I said 3:30 that Matt's wheels were turning and he was going to comment on that.
Yeah,
I sent that 3:36 a.m. text the other day. One, because, well, when you're up at that time, you just think funny things, and you got to get the information out there. The other reason is I actually sent that to both of you, hoping that would be the first thing you saw in the morning and start off your day going, what the fuck?
Well, yeah. When you send me that, those type, and I get up in the morning. I'm not really a morning person, so I kind of look at your text and go, what the fuck? And then I just go about my business for the day, and I forget all about it.
So also, from time to time, I'll try to time it to where you'll get the text during dinner.
Yeah, I know. You've made me throw up in my mouth on numerous occasions, or gagged. Yes, thank you. I appreciate that.
Awesome.
And especially the text that sometimes I get on Sunday evenings before the show, because you know that I sit down with my parents and have dinner on Sundays with them. And
so they're not surprised.
No, they're not surprised, but they see these weird looks on my face, you know, like I'm about to blow up. And, of course, Mom knows you so much now. She's like, was that Jeff? I was like, yes. So yes. But back Tuesday, 2-year anniversary, hopefully Jody will call in. Jeff, and for all the radio shows, it's not just celebration of 2 years, but I have three new co-hosts, three lovely ladies that co-host the show with me, and I don't know about you guys because, I'm just saying I don't know if you can hang with these girls because they are on the same level of thought process and vulgarness as Jody is. So it's Jody times three that I have now.
But do they burp like Jody?
No, they can't burp like Jody, but they definitely can hold their own against any man out there. And they're funny as shit. I laugh my ass off. They're great. They're wonderful. And this gives all the host an opportunity to chat with them and actually get to know them and laugh your ass off because I don't know. They pull stuff out of thin air that are just funny as shit. And so, and it'd be kind of cool. I told the girls, my new co-host, I said, I really hope Jody calls in because I really want to see how this goes. Because now we'll have four vulgar women on air at the same time. So there's no telling where it's going to go.
Did you see what Dennis posted on our Facebook? You are in Facebook group thing?
No, because I was trying to wrap the show up. I'll look at it here in a sec.
I want you to look at it while we're still on the air.
All right, hang on.
And try to read it out loud without laughing.
Okay, let's see what he's got here. Let's see. Okay, it's loading. Can we talk about whether you use lube to stick your foot up his ass? Like, take a tunnel or something. Thank you, Dennis. You asshole.
And we will talk about that on Wednesday night.
Here's another perfect example, everybody, while we're talking about this. I posted in our little private group for all the hosts of the shows. I put stuff in there, information for everybody, where I don't have to send out mass Facebook messages. I can just post and everybody sees it. I was talking about Tuesday, and Jeff's first comment was, can we talk about baseball? And I put LOL, and then he goes, I wasn't kidding. And then I said, LOL, okay. And then poor Ryan, he doesn't really know Jeff's smart-assness that he has. Jeff goes, well, we could discuss baseball's ghosts and stuff. And then Ryan said, is it going to be a show about baseball? He actually thought that Jeff was going to do a 2-hour show on baseball. And I said, no, Ryan. It's an anniversary show. I will hang up on Jeff if he talks about baseball. And then Jeff said, and then I'll stick my foot up your ass. Ryan laughs out loud. And then we go to Dennis, who says, can we talk about whether you use lube to stick your foot up his ass? Like, take a pole or something. So that's where we're at in that conversation. That will probably continue to get worse as it goes on.
Oh, it will. It will.
Oh, God. Well, Jeff, you got something to play us to get us out of this chaotic night?
Somewhere. Let's see. What is that one? I don't know.
I don't want to hear you singing. Pick something that's actually been sold and made money off of.
Excuse me, I have a beautiful voice, thank you. I believe I'm the only person on this show who has done about 10 different musicals and an opera. Thank you.
And this has been
Let me remind you. Let me remind you, Jeff. Let me remind you.
Okay.
You are not the X Factor. Remember when you tried out for the X Factor? You didn't even make it through the first round.
I'm too big for the X Factor. The X Factor would not be able to handle the chaos that comes with me. And they recognize that. They'd be like, they were like, oh, we'd tell this guy that to play, you know, this type of music, and he'd just look at us and go, no, I'm playing this. And that's exactly what happened.
And for all the ones listening to the archives, enjoy all the summer shows, because this is when Bassing Jeff is an every Sunday deal, because when Jeff gets in his mode where he actually talks, the lively Jeff, that's when I start bashing Jeff.
You know, but like hell it is. You do that no matter what. I could be asleep and you're going to bash me.
Oh, yes, but it's more fun. It's more fun when you comment, because then I can bash even more.
Who the hell put songs by Flo Rida on here?
Oh,
I don't know.
Flo Rida is awesome. Do not diss the Flo.
Never say that. Never. Okay, yeah, don't ever call him that again while I'm on the show. And just for that, we're going to be leaving out tonight with Waylon Jennings, "Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys." Good night, everybody.
Cowboys ain't easy to love, and they're hard to hold. They'd rather give you a song than diamonds or gold. Lone Star belt buckles and old faded Levi's, and each night begins a new day. If you don't understand him, he don't die young. He'll probably just ride away. Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. Don't let them pick guitars and drive them old trucks. Let them be doctors and lawyers and such. Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. They never stay home and they're always alone, even with someone they love.
Cowboys like smoky old pool rooms and clear mountain mornings.